it's good to see that y'all returned this evening. It is a blessing to be with you tonight. It was definitely a blessing to get to know all of you a little bit this afternoon, to worship with you today, and to be encouraged by you. And I hope that you have been encouraged as well. Whether or not Shannon and I end up moving here and working with you, my goal is and my prayer is that all of you have been encouraged, that this has been a day of edification and worship for the Lord our God. Open up your Bibles to 1 Samuel once again this evening. I think sometimes, well, before I begin my lesson, I'd also like to thank John and Sherry for having Shannon and myself over and for staying up with us this weekend. Treated us very hospitably and as if we're family. And all of you have treated us very kindly, and we're thankful for that. I think sometimes we don't appreciate the blessing that we have of being able to look back on other people's mistakes and learn from them without having to physically learn from their mistakes and suffer the consequences that they have. Whenever my sister and I were growing up, she's 2.5 years older than I am, and being the younger sibling, I was able to observe some of the choices that she made and see how she suffered sometimes and able to learn from those things. Sometimes I wasn't as smart as I should have been, and I made the same mistakes. But sometimes I was able to avoid being punished by learning from her mistakes. Whenever my younger brother came along 6 years later, he was able to learn from both of our mistakes, and he really got the best end of the deal. And that's just the way it is with siblings, but it's also that way for us as New Testament Christians. The Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, in verse 6, talking about learning from the Israelites' mistakes, the Apostle Paul says, "Now these things happened as examples for us, so that we would not crave evil things as they also craved." In other words, the things that were written for us in the Old Testament were written for our example, our learning. And if we're smart about it, we'll be able to learn from others' mistakes and avoid the problems that they often face for their own choices that they make. We'll be like my younger sibling, who learn from our mistakes. This morning we talked about Samuel, who was a positive example, and this evening we're going to talk about Saul, who is very much a negative example. And unfortunately, he suffered from his bad choices that he made. This lesson tonight, I'd like to refer to Saul as being the king of bad decisions. First of all, if someone's really good at something, then you may call them the king of something. If they're good at chess, you may call them the king of chess, or they're really good at water skiing, the king of water skiing. But there is something that Saul was really good at. It was making bad choices. When you look at his life and how he lived it, there were bad choices layered on top of one another. And the lesson that we learn from him is that our choices, no matter what they are always going to have consequences. And more specifically about Saul, if you make bad choices, there always are going to be bad consequences. Now, you may not observe them right away. Saul didn't always observe the consequences of his actions right away. But all of his choices ended up coming back to bite him. He learned the power of choices that we make in our lives. So I want us to look at three choices that Saul made in his lifetime tonight, and look at how they affected his future and how they affected, eventually, his fate. The first choice was the choice that he made to be proud, the choice of conceit, which was interesting because whenever we first meet Saul in 1 Samuel chapter 9, he's not a proud man. He's a very humble man. He comes from very, very humble beginnings. In chapter 9, we learn about Saul that he is a donkey herder. And he's going out to find his father's donkeys who are wandering away. And that's not really the typical upbringing for a king here. That's a rather lowly beginning for this man, Saul. And in fact, whenever he comes in contact with Samuel, and Samuel tells him, not specifically that you're going to be king yet, but he tells him that there are great things stored up for you for Israel. Look what Saul says in verse 21 of chapter 9. Saul replied, "Am I not a Benjamite, of the smallest of the tribes of Israel? And my family the least of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin? Why then do you speak to this way?" As soon as Saul hears the good news that he's going to do something great in Israel's history, his first inclination is not to parade himself and say, oh yeah, of course. It's an obvious thing why you chose me. But he even doubts himself. Why are you choosing me? Out of all the people of Israel, my family is the least of the tribes of Israel. I'm a donkey herder. I don't have much experience. He's a humble man. He comes from very humble beginnings, and he knows that. In fact, in chapter 15 of 1 Samuel, jumping forward a little bit, in 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 17, after Saul has already become king, Samuel comes to him in verse 17 saying, "Is it not true, though you were little in your own eyes, you were made the head of all the tribes of Israel? And the Lord anointed you king over Israel." Even Samuel recognized that Saul, whenever he first was appointed king, he was little in his own eyes. He didn't have a big head. He wasn't proud. He wasn't conceited. He didn't go about parading himself. But he was little. In fact, in 1 Samuel chapter 10, whenever Saul is appointed king, and Samuel brings all of the Israelites together to draw lots and figure out who is going to be the next king. Of course, Samuel already knows. And Saul's lot is drawn, and they can't find him anywhere. He's hiding among the baggage because he's too humble. He's too timid to come out and parade himself. And that's the kind of character that Saul had in the very beginning. He's a very humble man. But as soon as he becomes king, it's almost like he changes 180 degrees right away. Right away, he becomes proud. His head gets very big, and he changes completely from a very humble man to a very proud and very conceited individual. For a few examples, just to show you how proud he got, turn to 1 Samuel 14. 1 Samuel 14, verse 24, it says, "Now the men of Israel were hard pressed on that day, for Saul had put the people under oath, saying, 'Cursed be the man who eats food before evening, and until I have avenged myself on my enemies.' And so none of the people tasted food." Aside from this being a very foolish order that Saul gives, I mean, his army, they need food, they need sustenance, they need strength in order to go and fight a battle. And it's very foolish, first of all, for Saul to say, "You can't eat anything until we win this battle." But aside from that, it's also a very selfish thing for him to do. I mean, he's making his troops suffer. For what cause? Well, look at what he says. "Cursed be the man who eats food before evening until I have avenged myself on my enemies." And this opportunity that Saul has to go fight this battle against the Philistines, is he's almost looking at this as his personal opportunity to gain vengeance or gain renown among the people of Israel, among the nations. It's a very selfish thing that he did in this case. Whenever he wins the battle, in verse 35 of 1 Samuel 14, it says, "And Saul built an altar to the Lord." It was the first altar that he built to the Lord. Now that's interesting that the writer of 1 Samuel would insert that little note there, that even though this wasn't his first battle that he won, this was the first time that he decided he was going to build an altar to the Lord. It's almost as if giving thanks to God was an afterthought to Samuel or to Saul. It was just kind of he didn't really pursue it that much, giving thanks to God and giving him recognition. We see him becoming a very selfish individual. In 1 Samuel chapter 15, if that's not enough, look at what he does in 1 Samuel 15, in verse 12. At this point, Saul has gone to the Amalekites like he was told to, and of course we know that he didn't destroy them as he was commanded, but look what Saul does out of his arrogance in verse 12. It says, "Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, and it was told Samuel, saying, 'Saul came to Carmel, and behold, he set up a monument for himself, and then turned and proceeded on down to Gilgal.'" But now, how arrogant can he get? He's defeated the Amalekites, somehow convinced himself that he has carried out the command of the Lord, and he sets up a monument to himself. Before, in chapter 14, at least he set up an altar to God, even though it was just his first one. But here he's setting up a monument to himself. You know, we've got a lot of monuments in our country. our nation's history is full of great men and women who've done great things for our country, but most of those men and women didn't set up monuments for themselves. The only reason we've got the Lincoln Memorial is because people after Lincoln came and set that up for himself. He didn't do that. But Saul, look what he did. He set up a monument for himself. What arrogance, what pride caused him to do that? And then, of course, whenever David comes on the scene, who is the threat to the throne of Saul, the only thing that drives Saul is his selfishness, his jealousy, his pride. We just see that over and over again. He's driven by his pride, his arrogance. And the point I want you to realize is that he didn't begin that way. How can a man who's so humble in the very beginning end up to the point where he sets up a monument for himself, and he even goes to the point of trying to destroy anyone who is a threat to his throne? It's nothing but the choice of pride. Somewhere along the way, Saul made the choice to become pride and let his head get big. We don't know exactly what caused that. We know that he was a good-looking man. He was tall. He was head and shoulders above everybody else. Maybe he let that get to his head. Maybe he became proud because of that. But whatever it was a choice that he made. And we learn a couple of things. First of all, humility is a choice, just as pride is a choice. There is nothing that forces us to be proud. There is nothing that forces us to be humble. We've got to make the choice either way. Saul made the choice somewhere along the right. Sometimes we say that power corrupts people. And maybe it would be more accurate to say that the choice to pursue power is what corrupts. It's not the power itself, or for that matter, it's not money itself that corrupts. It's not prestige itself or fame itself that corrupts, but it's our choice. Based upon how we're going to react to those circumstances, that is what corrupts. It comes down to choices. Our circumstances, our surroundings don't determine who we are. We determine who we are based upon our circumstances. There's nothing that forces us to go either way. And Saul made the choice to let his pride get to him, let his power make his head bigger than it ought to. So that's the first thing, is either humility or selfishness is always a choice that we make. And secondly, we learn just how easy it is for us to lose our humility and let pride seep in. Just how easy it is for that to happen. Saul began as a humble man, but he let down his guard, and that pride began to seep in. That's just how easy it can be. It's not very easy for us to maintain humility. Humility is one of these things that's kind of funny. As soon as you say, "I'm a humble person," you've lost your humility. As soon as you begin to recognize, "Oh, I'm such a humble person," and you begin to praise yourself and become proud of your accomplishments, that's when pride begins to seep in. And that can happen so easily. It happened to Saul. And it certainly can happen to you and I. We may be humble right now, but it's going to take some work to maintain that humility. We've always got to be feeding that humility. And if we're not careful, we can end up just like Saul was. Become proud. Become arrogant, as he was. And so that's the first choice that he made. And unfortunately, this first choice that he made of glorifying himself and being arrogant, this really led to a couple more choices that he made. Secondly, Saul made the choice to disobey God. And blatantly disobey God. Turn in your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 13. This was, in fact, the first major mistake that Saul made in his kingship. And in 1 Samuel chapter 13, we've got to look at the context before we understand what's going on here. Samuel had come to Saul and told him, "Once you become king, then you are to wait 7 days in the city of Gilgal before you do anything. Now, don't do anything. Don't make any decisions. I'm going to tell you what to do. Don't even sacrifice until I come to you and tell you what to do." And in verse 5, it tells us that the Philistines were assembled to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen, and people like the sand which is on the seashore in abundance.
and they came up and camped in Michmash, east of Beth-Aven. When the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were hard-pressed, then the people hid themselves in caves and thickets and cliffs and cellars and in pits. And some of the Hebrews crossed the Jordan into the land of Gad and Gilead. But as for Saul, he was still in Gilgal, but all the people were trembling, or followed him, trembling. So we've got to understand what's going on here. Saul is waiting in Gilgal for 7 days, and he's seeing this huge army assembling, like the sand of the seashore. They've got armies, they've got chariots, they've got horsemen. And he's seeing all this battle assembling, and he's becoming afraid. His people are becoming afraid, and so afraid that they're hiding in caves and in holes. Some of them are fleeing from him. They're trembling. Saul says, I've got to do something about this. Now, my people are going to leave me. Well, I've got to do something about this. And so verse 8 tells us, now he waited 7 days according to the appointed time set by Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him. And so Saul said, bring to me the burnt offerings and the peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. As soon as he finished offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him and to greet him. So Saul deliberately disobeyed Samuel's order. He took it upon himself to offer these sacrifices against Samuel's wishes. Now that's the first instance in which he disobeyed God's command. Go forward 2 chapters to 1 Samuel chapter 15. And Saul does the very same thing. This is the story of whenever Saul was told to go out to the Amalekites and completely wipe them out, destroy them for what they had done against God's people. And we know the story, how he did not do that. He spared Agag, the king. He spared the best of the sheep, the best of the oxen. And he made excuses for that. Look what I'm doing this so that I can sacrifice to the Lord. But I want you to notice, first of all, that he deliberately disobeyed the Lord's command. And as Brother Art wrote, read for us, verse 23, Samuel comes to him and he says, because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king. That's the consequence for Saul's choice. He was rejected from being king. His sons, none of his family, would be able to continue being in this kingship, in this line of kings. He was rejected from being king. So we learn from Saul the consequences of the choice of disobedience, but far more than that. We also learn what cause is sometimes us to be disobedient. What's interesting to me about these two instances in 1 Samuel chapter 13 and 1 Samuel 15 is that Saul had convinced himself somehow that he had obeyed. He convinced himself that he did what the Lord told him to do, and he was justified in his own eyes. In 1 Samuel 13, he saw this great army, and he thought that he had to do something, so he needed to ask the favor of the Lord. So he says, I forced myself to ask for the Lord's favor. He convinced himself that he was doing right. And look at chapter 15 of 1 Samuel. Verse 13, it says, after the incident with the Amalekites, verse 13, Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, blessed are you of the Lord. I have carried out the command of the Lord. The first one to speak here is Saul. He's the first one who steps in and he says, look, Samuel, you told me to do. And in verse 15, Saul said, they have brought them from the Amalekites. For the people spared the best of the sheep and oxen to sacrifice the Lord your God, but the rest we have utterly destroyed. And Samuel said to Saul, wait, and let me tell you what the Lord has said. And so Samuel gives him this message. And in verse 20, it's almost like Saul still doesn't realize what he's done. Verse 20, I did obey the voice of the Lord. In Saul's mind, he was convinced that he had done what the Lord told him to do. Somehow he justified himself. And that's what caused him to disobey. But that's also what sometimes causes us to disobey. We sometimes convince ourselves that our disobedience is justified somehow. A couple of ways we do that. First of all, we may say, well, my circumstances are different than everybody else's. I've got extenuating circumstances in which the command of the Lord doesn't apply to me.
And we forget that no matter who we are, the command of the Lord stands fast. No matter who we are responsible for obeying the Lord. That's one way in which we do that. We may also say, well, that command applies more to this person more than it does to me. This person has more responsibility in that area than I do. Or sometimes we may say, well, I've got a better way of doing it. I don't understand what the Lord has told me to do, but I've got a better way of doing it. Isn't that what Saul did? Whenever he saw the army assembled against him, and he said, well, I know what I should do. The Lord just thinks that I should ask for his favor. We justify ourselves in the very same way. Or sometimes we may say, well, look at what everybody else is doing. Saul said, well, they took the best of the flock. It wasn't me, it was they. They were the ones who did it. We do that in the same way. And the point that I want to make is that we can make up all these types of excuses like Saul did. But at the bottom line, at the end of the day, there is no excuse, no reason at all for us not to simply obey what the Lord has told us to do. Samuel comes to Saul in 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 22, and says, has the Lord as much delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than a sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. And the message there is that there is no better way for us to interact with God than just to obey what he tells us to do. That's what he demands of us. He doesn't want our excuses. He doesn't want anything else from us but just our obedience. He doesn't want our worship if it's not done in obedience. And if obedience is not most important, our worship will mean nothing to him. He wants our obedience. And sometimes we make it a lot more difficult on ourselves by making excuses. But the bottom line is, we can never offer any excuse for simply not obeying the Lord. That's what we're told to do, is to obey the Lord. And so we learn from Saul, first of all, the consequences of disobedience, but also how tempting it can be sometimes to not obey. We see that Saul suffered because of that, for his choice of disobedience. The third choice and final choice that Saul made in his lifetime was the choice of jealousy. And you may say, well, that's very similar to our first point, where he was proud. And it is. His jealousy was certainly fueled by his pride. But this was such a big part of his life that we can't really make a point. We have to make a point by itself. Saul was an incredibly jealous man. Which is also interesting, because Saul did not start out as a jealous man. Go back with me to 1 Samuel chapter 11. In 1 Samuel 11, well, backing up a chapter or so, whenever Saul was appointed king, there were some men who scoffed at him, who said, he's never going to make anything. He's not worth anything. How can he be king over Israel? And Saul said, well, that's okay. He ignored that. In 1 Samuel chapter 11, verse 12, after Saul has won his first victory, it says, then the people said to Samuel, who is he that said, shall Saul reign over us? Bring those men that we may put them to death. But Saul said, not a man shall be put to death this day. For today the Lord has accomplished deliverance in Israel. You see Saul's humility there? Here are some people who doubted him, who scoffed at him, who laughed at him, who thought he would never amount to anything. And here he's got an opportunity to take vengeance on them, but he doesn't. Because the Lord has given us victory today. And the point that we can make from that is Saul had tremendous potential. And really, that's the whole point of the lesson. Saul had tremendous potential as a great king of Israel. He started out as a humble man. He started out as a very generous man to these men. He had tremendous potential. Threw that away by making the choice to become proud and jealous. And that's true for all of us. Every single one of us has tremendous potential. The Lord has made us. He's given us commands because we have potential to obey him and to love him and to serve him and to do good things as his people. But
But we too can make the same choice to throw that away by disobeying and becoming jealous and becoming proud. We have potential. Saul did. But we know the story of how Saul ended up becoming so tremendously jealous and so afraid that David was going to go and take over. And when you look at the things that Saul did because of his jealousy, it is really quite frightening. He tried to intimidate David. He tried to set him up with his daughters to get him killed. He tried to send him out to battle to get the Philistines to kill him, and therefore he wouldn't be responsible for that. He even went so far to almost kill his own son and to threaten him, Jonathan, because Jonathan was good friends with David. And if that's not enough, he went even so far to kill 84 or 85 priests of God. God's own ministers. Because Saul thought that they were conspiring against him and helping David. He was a tremendously jealous man, and it drove him to do things that he probably would have never done without having that jealousy. And the lesson that we learned from that is that we should never, never underestimate just what jealousy can do to us. It can drive us to extremes. James chapter 3 in the New Testament here, James tells us just how dangerous jealousy is. In verse 16, James says, "For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder from every evil thing." Jealousy is of many types of evils. If there is jealousy somewhere in a marriage, if there's jealousy in a church, there's jealousy in a family, there's jealousy among friends, eventually that's going to come out and it's going to destroy those things. How many marriages can you think of that have been totally thrown away because of jealousy? How many friendships? How many churches have been destroyed because of jealousy that resides in people's hearts? And sometimes in our own hearts. We've got to be careful to root out those seeds of jealousy. And it is so dangerous because sometimes our jealousy can be so deceiving because it doesn't seem like that big of a deal for me to look at somebody else with jealousy. It's just an inward feeling. It's not really going to come out anyway. But if we're feeling inside of us fester and just grow and get bigger, if we don't ever do anything about it and root it out, eventually it will come out. And it will cause us to do things that we would have never done before. Jealousy will drive us to do things that we never thought, dreamed that we would do. That's what it did to Saul. It drove him to extremes, drove him to madness. We were trying to destroy the man after God's own heart.
And so that's the danger of jealousy.
And it's also very interesting when we think about why Saul was so jealous. Maybe this is speculation, but every time Saul probably saw David, he was reminded, first of all, that David was going to be his replacement. That's why he was jealous in the first place. But secondly, perhaps he was also reminded that David was going to be his replacement because of his own choices. Every time he saw David, perhaps he was reminded that David was the consequence of his own pride and jealousy and conceit. And maybe his jealousy was fueled by that regret of those decisions that he made. And if there's something that's worse than making a bad decision, it is failing to accept responsibility for our bad decisions. And that's exactly what Saul did. Yeah, he made a lot of bad decisions. And all of us have at some point made bad decisions. But what broke the straw that broke the camel's back was Saul's inability to see that he was responsible. He refused to accept responsibility for the choices that he made. Instead, he fueled everything, he did everything that he could to try to reverse it and try to wipe David off the map instead of just accepting that this was the consequences of his choices. And we've got to learn a lesson from that. That whenever we do make bad decisions, as Saul did, the best thing to do, and the only thing to do, is for us to accept responsibility for that and accept the consequences that come because of that.
And Saul's jealousy is really a good reminder of just how powerful our choices really are. Gary Sandusky, who's a preacher down in Madison, Indiana, he held a meeting for us a few months ago, I think it was last year, down at Douglas Hill. It's all the same anyway. He held a meeting for us, and he was talking about the book of Proverbs. And he was showing just how important, or just how much the book of Proverbs talks about the choices that we make. And he told us about this chain of events, or chain of through which our choices become our lifestyles. And he said that our thoughts turn into our attitudes. Our attitudes turn into our actions. And our actions define our habits. And our habits define our life. And then our life determines our destiny. See that chain? It begins with our thoughts. Our thoughts determine our destiny. Determine where we end up at the end. You see how important choices are? Choice happens whenever we decide to let a thought rule our actions, whether it be jealousy, whether it be disobedience, whether it be pride. That thought, whenever we allow that to determine our actions, that's where we make a mistake. And we've got to nip that in the bud and make sure we're very careful to not make the bad choice, because it can influence, and it does influence, our destiny at the very end. And at the very end of Saul's life, you probably know how he ended up. He was in battle with the Philistines at the end of 1 Samuel, and he sees that he's losing the battle, and he asks his sword bearer, his armor bearer, to kill him. And the armor has he doesn't have the strength and the courage to do that. So Saul falls on his own sword, and he commits suicide. And unfortunately, that's a very fitting end for this man. Not in a good way, obviously. But because it's very ironic that throughout his life, he was consistently falling on his own sword because of his choices that he made and his failure to accept responsibility for his choices. And so at the very end of his life ended because of a bad choice that he made. And that's just how powerful choices are. They determine where we're going to end up at the end. And so that's Saul's life, and I hope that we can learn from him, because he is a tremendous example for us. We need to learn the power of choices. And thankfully, there is hope for us if we have made bad decisions. This lesson is not designed to make any of us feel bad about the decisions we've made or the mistakes that we've made, because probably all of us have made mistakes. But there is hope for us as long as we're alive. As long as we have breath in our lungs, the Lord is giving us opportunity to accept responsibility for our choices and make those things right. And the Lord will forgive us if we obey Him, we repent, we confess our sins before Him. If you're not a Christian tonight, make the choice to become a Christian. Devote your life to the Lord. He will forgive you no matter what the mistakes that you've made. That's what salvation is all about. That's what God's grace is intended to do. It's intended to forgive you and to wipe clean your slate. And if you come to Him in humble obedience, being baptized, your sins will be washed away. That's the assurance that the New Testament gives us. Your mistakes will be wiped clean. And if you are a Christian, and perhaps you've made some mistakes, and you want to make those things right with the Lord, He will forgive you. Accept those responsibilities, and He'll forgive you. Whatever needs you might have, hope that you make them known. All together we stand and sing.